What's up, Grizz Nation? Welcome to the show. It's Dayton Isaac. Along with a guest today, we're going to talk to Miss Lauren Gunn. She is a credentialed media member for the NBA. She is a contributor for SB Nation's Mavs Moneyball, and she hosts a podcast herself along with her brother called The Gunshot. So she is an expert in all things Mavs. The Mavs have proven to be pretty difficult for the Grizzlies to handle this year. So we're going to get her take on what it is that's leading to the Mavs beating the crap out of the Grizzlies this year.
Well, thanks. Thanks for having me. It's good to be here. It's good to chat with you guys.
So one thing for me, when the Mavs made the Jason Kidd hire, where were you at with that? Did you feel like that was going to be an upgrade moving on from a guy that had been there that won a title for the Mavericks, and then, you know, moving on to Kidd, who he's really had like a rocky history when it comes to coaching in the NBA. I didn't feel like he was the right guy for the job, but in his initial press conference, he mentioned, you know, we're going to be trusting each other. You're going to see us play defense. And especially as of late, that's really what is fueling this run by the Mavs.
Right. Yeah. I don't know that going into it, I would have said that, oh, this is an upgrade. I was definitely nervous about it because I thought Jamal Mosley was a great candidate and that he had the backing of the people that were there internally. And that may have still been the case, but at the end of the day, that's not what happened. And so I was a little disappointed that he didn't get more consideration for the position. I thought it was well-deserved. And so for a while I was like, it's Mosley, it's gotta be Mosley. And then very quickly, it was never Mosley and it was Jason Kidd. And so it took me a minute to kind of wrap my brain around how that could even be. So I'm sure you can kind of make your guesses on how I felt about that. With Jason Kidd, it was clear that there was a new set of priorities, and it wasn't as much, okay, we need to have somebody that is so incredibly creative when it comes to the X's and O's, and we need to have somebody that's so focused on that area of the game. We're now shifting our focus to somebody who's a little bit younger, who is known for his relationship with players, who can make these guys feel kind of like you hinted at a second ago, like empowered and just valued within the system, the offense, the defense, everything. And so there were a lot of questions about, is that going to be enough? Making guys feel like they're special. Is that enough? You know what I mean? And hearing like, okay, we're going to play a little defense. It was that there was another thing. It was like, okay, well, we got pretty much the same group with a couple of additions, but nothing too crazy. So how are we going to take this team who has been, they've shown like flashes of defense in the past, but consistently overall, they have not been a defensive team. And we've tweaked the scheme a little bit, the rotation, and now the Mavs are playing solid defense. And you can see this year, on a game-to-game basis, watching them in comparison to last year and even the year before that, the player interaction with the coaches, the player interactions with each other, and I'm not just talking about Luka and Porzingis, I'm talking about everybody, they're much more close-knit as a group from top to bottom. The coaches, it's not just Jason Kidd doing the majority of the interacting or anything like that. It is very much like a think tank dynamic. They're always bouncing ideas off of each other, and you can just tell that the guys are having fun. They're loving the success that they're having on both ends of the floor and I guess as a whole. And so, yeah, there's just this renewed energy and feeling of like cohesion just with this group. So it's very different. I still am not like, oh, great hire, like done deal. It's done. All of my concerns are washed away. I don't feel that way at all. But I've been very pleased to see how the kind of empowerment and how it's impacted the culture and how the defense has really stepped up.
Yeah, to go back to Rick Carlisle and his time there, I mean, did a fantastic job there, but sometimes guys stay around a long time and it just kind of gets, I don't know what the word to say, stale, I guess, once a guy's been there so long. But I always thought that he was a fantastic coach for that team and he kind of fit the identity and the culture they had built there. But you have all this stuff coming out now that you, from the outside, we had no idea that this stuff was going on with Luka and Dennis Smith Jr. and how he kind of treated that whole situation and there was some stuff going on behind the scenes. Kind of comment on that and your thoughts on that whole situation with Dennis Smith and how, I guess, he didn't really want him to kind of emerge as a guy for that team. It's kind of a weird situation.
Yeah, definitely. So there were a lot of things going on with Dennis Smith Jr. or with that situation that we just didn't hear about really from either. It was just out of nowhere. Dennis would like to move on. And so there were questions. Did he quit? Where's the coaching staff with him? Like, what happened? And then after, to see more and more details come out, not about that situation, just that situation, but about all of it and Rick's time, you could really start to put the pieces together and kind of figure out probably what went down. And then obviously that piece came out about Dennis Smith and his time there, and he commented on it and how he felt it was a fair assessment of what went down. And so I remember watching, obviously, in the last couple of years, it's always been about how's Luca with Carlisle and how is Porzingis with Carlisle. That's kind of been the big focus. And as time went on, it didn't look great. Like I go back to this last year's the playoff run as a whole, not just the finals, but with Monty Williams and Chris Paul. Granted, they have a lot of history and a previously established relationship. You can see how much they value each other and how close they are. And that was never something that you would have seen with Dallas, with Rick, and really with anybody besides Dirk. And so like that time, that era came and went. Like I hate to put it that way, but like you gotta be able to connect with these guys and get everybody on the same page and believe in each other and want to play for each other. And if they don't want to play for you, you're gonna run into some big problems. And that's kind of what we saw a couple of times or multiple times. And so I remember just personally going to some games, or really, really looking back when I kind of realized this, but I would go to games and I would see players get subbed out, never high five Rick, never really say anything to Rick unless they were barking at him and kind of like yelling at him, which I know that term bark, I think, was actually used in an article that came out, but it was never a friendly exchange. It was never I think like outside of the Dirk era, it was really never I don't know. It wasn't great. It didn't look good as a fan, as someone who covers the team. Like it was not good. And so when all of this came out and it was very clear that a lot of people went silent, to me, the people that went silent versus the people that spoke up about Rick, like that said more to me than the people that spoke up. And so when Coach Kidd got in, media day rolls around, I asked some of the players about the culture, other people asked players about the energy around the locker room, and they're very vocal about how positive and encouraging and inclusive this new culture is that's being established. That said a lot to me. So I'm closely following this Indiana situation because I think it's very fascinating, and I will be very interested to see if any players come out and say anything about their time in Indiana with this very brief era this year. I don't know that will be the case, but it's definitely something that I'm following closely.
Yeah, it is interesting that they've kind of fallen down a little bit to kind of read the tea leaves and look and see what is the situation that he had in Dallas and how that was handled, that maybe he has part to do with that, because it's important. Like a lot of people talk about culture and cliche. And I think that's one thing that's special about this Grizzlies team that we cover here in Memphis. Yeah, is from top to bottom, from the coaching staff to the front office to the players to the ball boy, everybody seems to be on the same page. And when that happens, you can have it bleeds over into the floor. I mean, you can see it, like you said, on the sidelines where he's coaching and they're talking to the coaches and they're high-fiving and doing things like that, and they're having for the team. You can see that on the sideline here in Memphis. And if you don't have that, sometimes it can cause you to struggle on the floor when everybody's not on the same page.
Yeah, definitely. And it's funny that you said that, because yesterday I was in the building for the Mavs-Grizzlies game, and ahead of time I was watching the developmental coaches and the shooting coaches work with Dakota Matias, Yves Pons, and Shaquille Harrison. And they were running some shooting drills, and the energy – like I've seen a lot of teams work out on the other end of that floor, and it was different watching the Grizzly. I mean, and you're talking two-way guys and a guy that's on, I'm not sure if Matias is still on a 10-day or where that stands, but
he's on a 10-day.
He's still on the 10-day. Okay. Yeah. So, but like the energy was incredible. And so I did very much enjoy that, because again, that's just not something you get all the time.
So while we're on relationships, I think it's good to like, talk about this from the outside looking in, it feels like Porzingis and Luka have not really, there's not been a great meshing there between those two. Like, how is there, like, as somebody that covers a team, is their relationship off of the floor pretty solid, or is that something, I mean, how are those two guys working together? It seemed like this year we've seen them there when Porzingis is playing, and I know both of them have kind of had some injury issues this year, but when they've been on the floor together this year, I think they've looked better than they have, you know, at any time in the past.
Yeah, this year truly has been so different. And it's very, like, they're sitting next to each other, which is going to sound so ridiculous because it's such a minor thing, but they're sitting there on the bench, they're laughing, they're talking after they're when they're on the floor together, I mean, they're working off of each other. The two-man game is there, which for so long, it was like on paper, these two should just be opening things up for each other left and right. Like with the way that they can score the ball, like they should be putting up crazy points, but they just weren't in the past. And so we're finally starting to see this two-man game, whether it's primarily the pick and pop, but every now and then a little bit of pick and roll. And it's just, it's been amazing. And in the past you didn't have that, because with Luka, the thing about Luka is that it doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't matter who you are. The dude wants to win. And if you're not putting 100% on the line every night, and if you're not giving it your all to get your team to win, like, that's not going to sit well with him. And so I'm not going to say that Porzingis was not giving it his all last year with Rick, but I do think that there's probably something to Rick asking him to stand in the corner, which very much we saw time and time again. You could just see Porzingis getting, when they would force feed him and then completely take him out of the offense. And you have to imagine that that would have some, like, psychological or even consistency implications on any player. And so after that continues to go on game after game, you could kind of see him. There were definitely times where you could see him check out a little bit because, well, what else would he do? He'd be standing in the corner, like he was taken out of the offense. And so then you have to look at Luka, who's like, okay, well, everyone keeps talking about how I need all this help, but I'm not getting any help. So I don't know 100% what was going on there or kind of where the disconnect was, but you could very clearly see it on the court. And apparently it was clear as day to the rest of the league too. And so now, again, different culture, different kind of, so very different scheme, rotation, everything is different, but they're very clearly on the same page. They're both just as well, I don't want to say just as, but they're both significantly highlighted within the offense. And it seems to be going very well. And like, I feel like the best example of this is just Porzingis. One, he's so engaged on the defensive end, which, if he's engaged on the defensive end, like that's really all you can ask for. The offense will figure itself out. But him setting multiple picks for Luka at the top of the key, or even just high screens, like outside of the 3-point line and multiple times in one possession, like that's what Luka needs. He just needs guys moving, trying different things, and he's going to find you in your spot. And Porzingis, very clearly, you can tell that there are times when he doesn't get the ball off the screen, or maybe he just does kind of flare out and looks at it like he's a decoy or something, but he gets his looks, he gets his shots, and Luka finds him in his spots, and this team seems to be rolling. So I don't know. I know that they're trying to keep it up, but as of right now, personnel wise, culture wise, I think it's all going well on the inside.
I was gonna say Desmond Bane is a guy here in Memphis who we think should be getting more love for most improved player. He's finally showing up on list now, but a guy for the Mavericks who I think is not really showing up on these lists either, who I think is really improving in fourth year in the league, is Jalen Brunson. I mean, his numbers are pretty much up. His shoot numbers a little bit down, but outside of that, scoring is up, and rebounds, assists, steals, everything's up pretty much across the board. Except the shooting numbers, I've been really impressed with him. Kind of talk about the season he's having and the improvements he's made.
Yeah, so Jalen Brunson is, gosh, I don't even know that I could say enough good things about him, because personality wise on the court, it's amazing. But with Jalen Brunson, in past years since he's been drafted, there have been games where, when Dennis Smith Jr. was around, briefly, it doesn't matter, but whenever Luka or whoever the starting point guard was, primarily Luka, isn't available and Jalen has had to step into that role, he has not taken any step back. He's risen to the occasion, and he puts up the numbers. And so for the longest time, I was like, okay, he could be this really solid sixth man for us. Just kind of spark off the bench. The coaching staff trusts him to run the second unit. Like he does not play like he's in his, you know, at the time, first year, second, like he plays like a 7 to 9 year veteran. And he's always kind of played that way. Made like his decision-making skills and just the way he reads the game has been so solid. And now this year he's kind of found himself the opportunity to take that step up and be the consistent starter. And again, there were still questions of, okay, well then who's going to run the second unit? And what does that mean for the rotation? How are him and Luka, like, are they still going to get their numbers? If those two are playing together, what does that mean for Porzingis? Like how is that all going to work? But it's worked fantastic. And Brunson finds a way to play off the ball, play on the ball, to give Luka his time off ball, just wherever he's needed. He does it and he does it well. And so the shooting numbers, like you mentioned, could definitely use some improvement. While I think that he should be in the running for the most improved player, I think I could name two or three guys off the top of my head that are probably a little bit more deserving of it. Desmond Bane being one of them. But Jalen Brunson is, every dollar that he earns in this extension is going to be well-earned. He's going into this season. Another thing was, is he potentially going to be dangled out there for trade? Because the Mavericks clearly need to take this next step up. Is he going to be their easiest way to do it, given their limited draft assets? And that was kind of where a lot of people's heads were at. But then as the season went on, it was like, you can't trade Jalen Brunson. Jalen Brunson's not going anywhere. You can't trade him. If you trade him, you pretty much have to reevaluate your rotation as a whole, because your debt, like, there's just too many questions, and he's so solid every single night. So yeah, I think he's established himself as the starter. I think they feel confident with that. His relationship with Luka, I mean, those two love each other. They're like brothers. And so I'm very happy with what I've seen from him. I think he's going to continue to trend upward year after year. And yeah, we'll see what happens in the playoffs, because it's always a different game in the playoffs. The stakes are higher, there's more pressure. And last year in the playoffs, he did not have the best performance. So I'm looking to see what this group can kind of continue to build upon from last year. And then obviously on the regular season, kind of going into playoffs.
We're getting close to the trade deadline, and you just mm-hmm. talked about the Mavs needing to take the next step forward. What does that look like for you? Do you feel like they, with the change in the coaching staff and the culture being better there, the improvements, you know, they go from they were 21st last season in defensive rating. They're number 4 right now. Mm-hmm. Over the last month, well, since December 31st, they're the only team in the league to have a defensive rating under 100. Do you feel like with those changes, that's enough for them to get to the next level? Or do you feel like they need to go out at this trade deadline, be aggressive, and try to find another piece to add to Porzingis and Luka?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's definitely been, there are a lot of areas where this team has improved this year, but they need to go out and make an improvement. And I think they're very, very aware of that, which is why they keep getting tied to guys like Marcus Smart, guys like John Collins, even Jeremy Grant. They know that they need to go out there and bring in another starter. And it's going to be interesting to see kind of what pieces are in play to get there. I think John Collins is interesting. Don't love it, don't hate it, but they need to go out and get somebody that they know can put up points. And right now we've got guys that maybe have taken a step back this year, but could give contribution or could put up points on a night to night basis on other teams. Kind of, I mean, I'm alluding to Tim Hardaway Jr. there. It's not this year with Brunson kind of stepping up and taking over that starting role. Reggie Bullock has gone back to the bench, and Tim Hardaway Jr. is still on the bench. And so I think the John Collins situation is very interesting to monitor, just given everything that's going on over in Atlanta and the fact that he is now, like, they're about to owe him a lot of money on top of all the other guys that they are currently owing money and will continue to owe money to. So that's very interesting to me. But for me, the Mavs' biggest need is just another scorer. They need a wing who can get his own shot. And I don't know how many of those guys there are out there right now. But if they can go into, and I shouldn't even say that are out there, I should say that are out there that they can reasonably expect to get a deal done with. Like, it's just, it's difficult. And so for the Mavs, I think they're just looking to bring in just more talent to get this roster a little bit more top heavy, because I think they're pretty set or pleased with their rotation and kind of where things are looking. But if they can bring, if they can consolidate some of these pieces and bring in someone that's going to be a starter that can give them points offensively, then that will be a huge win for them, especially going into the playoffs, kind of take the load off Luka, take the load off Porzingis even a little bit, and just continue to keep the defense there. And I think that they feel confident that they can sustain this level of defense, even if they have to make a move that would most likely require them giving up one of their key defensive pieces.
And we've seen the load management with Porzingis throughout his time there. Is that something that you think will continue up into the playoffs? Is it something that they're going to kind of, I guess, wean him off of it in the second half to where he's playing every game? But what are your thoughts on kind of how they're going to play that down the stretch?
Yeah, I think they're going to kind of – well, it also depends how close it is, like what the kind of steps are in the standings. If they're trying to avoid – like if that, so that the answer could vary there. But for the most part, I think they're going to kind of wean him off of that. They haven't been doing a whole lot of that this season. I want to say I've only seen like maybe two or three times that he's been set – on a back-to-back, maybe only even one time, but he's missed with COVID, and he's had a couple of other little things kind of nag at him that have resulted in him not being available. But as far as the load management, I don't see it being a huge priority or being, I think it's definitely something that's on their mind, because you always have to err on the side of caution, especially with these 7-footers. They're foot on the gas. They are going for it. And I think right now they view the West as being as wide open as it has been in a long time. I think Memphis probably has the same kind of thoughts on the Western Conference. And so they are full foot on the gas, trying to get that top 4 seed to get the home court advantage, definitely avoid the play-in and just kind of take it from there. So I'd say less likely, but wouldn't surprise me if every now and then you get, you know, an update that he's going to take a rest.
So the next dynamic that I want to go to from here is the way that these two teams, the Grizzlies and the Mavericks, have Luka has kind of solidified his spot as a star in the league, and Ja is up and coming. Mm-hmm. But these teams are not really that far apart whenever, you have a guy that handles the ball, that does the distributing, and then you have an elite 7-footer. Mm-hmm. And, that dynamic for these two teams is the same, but Luka and Ja get it done so much differently, right? So Luka is, like mid-range, shooting the threes, not athletic really at all, and that was kind of the knock on him coming out of the draft is, he's not hot, super athletic, but he still managed to come in and dominate.
We'll see how that worked out.
Yeah, exactly. And then you've got Ja Morant that's just, like night in and night out making these explosive plays. Mm-hmm. So I just want to, kind of hear your thoughts on the similarities between the two teams and then, both of the stars.
Oh man, it's very interesting. I think you hit it as far as having your point guard be kind of the star, the center of your universe, really. But yeah, Ja and Luka's games could not be more different. But one thing that I think is incredibly similar about their games is how they elevate and incorporate everyone else's games. And you don't always get that. Sometimes you have a star who's very clearly a star, or maybe they exceeded expectations out of the draft, whatever the case may be, but they don't truly elevate everyone else's games. And Ja does that very clearly by empowering, it's the way he hypes up his other guys. I love Ja's game. I don't think there's anybody that doesn't like Ja, but as far as the roster, it's interesting because I do think, Memphis feels a lot younger than Dallas. And right now with Memphis, the way I look at Memphis's roster is if a time comes when somebody becomes available and somebody's got to put some assets together to make that swing, I think Memphis is the team to do it. I thought Atlanta would be the team to do it, but I don't think they've got it together entirely. Whereas Memphis doesn't seem to be missing these days in the draft. Their development is solid. De'Anthony Melton, to me, is somebody that every team in the league should be knocking on Memphis's door for, because he's just so solid. So I think Memphis has a lot of options, and that's where I think it kind of differs from Dallas. Like, Dallas has been rolling with the same group for the most part for a long time, and it's no secret that they need to really not really shake things up, but they need to make a move to put themselves in the next category. Luka's playing at that level where you feel like, hey, you get the right matchup on any given night, he can just take you over that hump. He just can't, because he's that good and he's that dominant. But right now, I think the rest of the league is kind of looking at the roster saying, well, that's not going to take you. That might take you out of the first round. That might give you an upset, whatever, but that's not really going to take you where you want to go. And so I think the middle part of the roster between Dallas and Memphis is just a little bit different. Memphis, they're exceeding expectations. Like Tillman, like they've got it seems like every guy Memphis drafts comes in and is like, oh wow, that guy's actually really good. And the rest of the league is sitting there holding, like, just like, oh, we missed again, or we let this guy go again. And so it just, that's how I feel from the outside looking in at Memphis. But whereas Dallas, like, they need to get crafty with their moves, where I feel like Memphis can just continue to let some of these guys grow because they're so young. And if they like, they can just kind of decide what core that they want. And if, you know, Brandon Clark or Tillman or De'Anthony Melton or somebody, they decide they need to move on from somebody, they're going to have enough other pieces to replace whatever it is that they're losing. So I feel like Memphis is probably better suited to make future moves, if that makes sense, than Dallas is.
Yeah, when you compare the two stars, Jai and Luka, Jai, mm-hmm. even though he's in his third year, he's extremely young, and this entire team is young. So right. It's a little bit different, like you said, than Dallas, but Jai's really come in and put his step on his team and taking leadership of his team. And you can just see him coaching guys on the sideline and just really not only leading by example, but leading on the sideline and helping guys out and the relationships in the locker room. To kind of talk about Luka, Luka's now in his fourth year. We know what he does on the floor, which is mm-hmm. amazing how great he is. But kind of talk about his leadership abilities and has he really taken ownership of that Dallas team?
Yeah, he's definitely taken up ownership for the team. That threw me off. He's definitely taken ownership, and he's very much, when the team loses, like, you can see the frustration and like how personally he takes it almost. He's very much, I mean, Luka feels like he can beat anybody on any given night, and he can rise to the occasion. Doesn't matter if you have a James Harden, Kyrie, KD trio, he believes he can beat you any night. And so when he doesn't win, or the team, or the expectation is that, hey, this is where we're going to get, this is the round of the playoffs we're going to get, or we think that we can get here, whatever, if he falls short of that, he takes it personally, and he feels like at the end of the day, it is on his back, or like he's the one that kind of failed everybody. Well, I don't want to say that. I don't want to like speak for him like that, but you can just tell how much it kills him when he loses. And so there is a lot of pressure, not on him, more so on the front office and the roster building, because he is playing at the level where when he gets going on any given night, it doesn't matter who he's going up against. Like he feels like he can take you down. And so when it comes to the playoffs, especially this year, there are a couple of teams that Dallas probably won't want to play, but for the most part, I don't think they fear anybody. And if you were to obviously ask them, they'd say they don't fear anybody, but a Golden State would obviously not be ideal. But the point is that Luka feel like they can take down anybody, and they feel like going into the playoffs, it's going to be one round at a time. And they don't see, like, if their defense is playing at this level, Porzingis is playing at this level, Jalen Brunson is playing at this level, and Luka is playing at his level, they're not really afraid of anybody. And so that's where I think the trade deadline is going to come in big, because they definitely have a couple of areas that they need to improve upon if they really do want to get to where they want to go and want to give Luka that opportunity, or just put him in the best position as possible to get him where he wants to go. Then they've got some moves that they need to make. And it's very clear to me, and I'm assuming to them, what areas they need to improve upon.
So we're looking at all-star voting that just recently ended with the 22nd. So that was Saturday was the last
Saturday. Episode. Yeah.
And it's for the second spot for the West guards. It's been between Luka and Ja. Mm-hmm. Ja is ahead of Luka in voting right now. Do you feel like that's something that Luka, like, do you feel like he's recognizing that? Like he feels like he needs to step up against Memphis? Cause it seems like, and not that Luka ever really struggles against anybody, but it feels mm-hmm. like you can see him take it to another level.
It's different when he plays Memphis. You can just see it.
That's funny. No, I don't think he really thinks about it that way. I think he's looking at it as Ja deserves this spot. Ja, like what Memphis, the team success that they've had, even without him, and then the numbers and impact that he's had when he's been available, like team success has a lot to do with it. Whether it's the all-star team, the awards, whatever, team success is a big part of it. And so when your team, and I mean, Dallas is right there, but sometimes, or at least in my opinion, I don't know how Luka feels about it, but in my opinion, when you have a team that is having a year that is so dominant and so like just such a step forward than where they were before, even if the guy's numbers are just like a steady increase, not anything crazy, but just like a steady increase, you have to reward that. And so with the Mavs, I think the Mavs are kind of right where they expected to be, but Memphis is like 32-17. Like they have put themselves in a different spot, obviously, than the way more so than last year. So Luka, I think the Dallas media asked Luka about Ja and the all-star vote and the attention that he's getting, because for a long time it was Luka versus Ja, who's better, you know, for a minute there and probably still even now. But Luka said Ja deserves all the credit that he's getting. He's an incredible player. And the success that Memphis is having, like he deserves a ton of credit for that. And so I don't think Luka really looks at it as I got to step up against Memphis. I don't think he really was worried or even thinking about any player comparisons. The dude just wants to win. And I don't think he's like solely focused on the playoffs, but this dude wants to go far in the playoffs, and whether that means getting out of the first round, however far he wants to go. I mean, I know how far he wants to go, but whatever it ends up being, he is very much focused on having a successful season. I know he just, when it comes to like the all-star game, stuff like that, I think those are pretty low on his priority list.
Well, before we get out of here, man, I'd definitely be remiss without mentioning this. and we talked about Desmond Bane earlier, and during that first game after the Grizzlies got the win in Dallas, Desmond Bane in the post-game press conference made this comment. He was like, and he has a vendetta against all – it's not just Dallas. Like, he has made it known that he's going to try to punish all the teams that passed on him, that he ended up going 30th in the draft. Grizzlies traded up to get him. But he made a comment, and I didn't think anything about it. I tweeted out. He said, Josh Green was drafted before me, and I don't even know if he played tonight. And I don't think – and I didn't want people to think that he was trying to take a shot at Josh Green. I just think that's just who they happen to draft over him. So he just named him. I don't think he was talking about his game or anything. And Josh Green kind of, ever since those comments came out, kind of took off after that point. But
right.
I had no idea when I tweeted this out, it's going to be that big of a deal. But the tweet went viral, and Mavericks fans were like, man, all over, like tweeting Mark Cuban, saying, man, they messed up. And talk about that situation. How aware of the Mavericks fan base, they really seem to be aware that they passed on Desmond Bane. Kind of talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad you brought it up. So going into the draft, months ahead of going into the draft, like Desmond Bane, TCU,
everyone
had
everyone
had their eyes on Desmond Bane. We all wanted him going into the draft. There was a parade when we found out that we had just been interviewing ahead of the draft, kind of just doing your typical due diligence. And everyone's like, it's happening. We're getting him. It's happening. And then draft night rolls around. And in my opinion, Dallas takes Josh Green actually, let me go back. Going into draft night, there were questions of, should Dallas just take Desmond Bane at 18? Is he going to be there at 31? I don't know. It definitely seems like there are a lot of teams in the mid to late 20s that could use someone like Desmond Bane. He kept getting mocked to the Lakers. So a lot of people were like, maybe so you should just take him at 8. Happen. Oh my
yeah,
could you imagine? Definitely. Actually, I'm not even gonna. Oh, God, I can't imagine. I lose my mind. But yeah, so there were the questions of, okay, we're getting Desmond Bane one way or another. Which way are we gonna do it to make sure it happens? And then pick 18 rolls around and Sadiq Bey was still on the board. And a lot of people were kind of looking at that, like, oh, do we take Sadiq Bey? And then Josh Green gets selected. And a lot of people were like, what's happening? We knew Josh Green was on the radar, but there were a lot of people were kind of surprised by that. And so then you're going through the 20s, you're watching it go. And it's like, oh my God, we're really going to get Desmond Bane. Maybe not a lot of people, but I was like, okay, the reason they didn't take Desmond Bane there was because their intel is telling them that he'll be available at 31.
And I
think Memphis knew that, which is why they're like, we got to get there at 30. And so when I tell you, and I was actually talking, I was on a live thing with Sean Coleman. As soon as it gets announced that Boston has traded the pick to Memphis, I knew what was happening and I was beyond. And so did Sean. And Sean is like laughing at me and I was just beyond upset. And so obviously that goes down. Desmond is doing what he's doing. And with Rick Carlisle does not like to play rookies, which is why drafting someone like Desmond Bane, who wasn't 18 years old, 19 years old, made a lot of sense. And so Josh Green wasn't getting any time to develop, any time to build that confidence, get his shooting rhythm. There was just nothing going on there. And so it was very difficult from a fan perspective to watch this and then see Desmond Bane and Memphis, a team that is so solid with drafting and developing. And it just was very frustrating from the Mavs side of things. And then Josh Green would get out there from time to time and you would see like the flashes of what he can bring. He's so different from Desmond Bane, but you can see what he brings and why he's a value asset. But he just wasn't getting the opportunity. And then Coach Kidd comes in, this new season starts and there are questions about Josh Green. What are your thought processes? Or what's your thought process with him, your approach? And he said, we're not going to be looking at Josh's minutes as good or bad. We're going to be looking at him and evaluating him on how quickly he's developing. And I thought that was a perfect answer. And so Josh has gotten out there. He's gotten more minutes. He's continued to bring the energy and the defense that we all knew that he had, but you can see his confidence starting to build now that he has a more consistent role and the shooting has slowly started to increase. There's still got a ways to go there, but the defense, the playmaking, the in-air passes, like he has such great instincts, can still also use some improvement on the defensive end in terms of the fouls that he commits. Sometimes he's playing so hard that he just starts like, he's just like, I don't even know. He's just like the other guy. It's a very clear foul and he just doesn't see it because he's playing so hard. And so those are the types of things that with experience and with time, he'll improve upon, but he's very, this season has been huge for him and he's very much solidified himself with just as a part of this group and kind of their identity and just where he fits because they don't have another guy that brings what he brings. And so he's another guy that gets along very well in this locker room. The team loves him. Jalen Brunson, Luka, Dwight Powell, Maxi, like they're all very close. And so Josh Green for a minute there, it looked like, okay, if he's asked for in a trade and it's a very clear upgrade, not just for him, but included in a package, you've got to do it. But now it's kind of like, well, I don't know that we want to do that. I don't know that we want to do that. We don't really care that he's young. We see what he brings. You know what you're getting. There are no questions with what he's going to give you on a night-to-night basis. Again, very different player from Desmond Bane in terms of just where they're at and what their numbers are. But Josh Green does have a spot on this team and he's very much, he's a very clear part of this team's identity and where they're what they are trying to accomplish. He's got a clear place in that plan. But and the last thing I was going to say is Mavs Twitter, anything Desmond Bane are going to go for it because they're still so upset about it because look at what Desmond's doing. And so they're never going to get over that the same way that they're always going to say Luka versus Trey. It's not even a debate. Both teams didn't win. We won by a mile, like be quiet. So it's all kind of the same principle. Anything Desmond Bane, there's going to be so much anger there that we didn't come away with him, but
yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, you're good. You're good.
I think I got like 2,600 replies.
that sounds about right.
That at all. It was
sounds about right.
Crazy. But real quick, I know we're running long. I do want to ask you about just totally off subject. Maxi Kleber is a guy who he's one of those guys that you love him when he's on your team and you hate him when you're playing against him. He gets under your skin. He's a guy that the numbers aren't eye popping, but he does a lot of things well. Plays good defense, rebounds, brings good size, can shoot. Kind of talk about, is he a fan favorite down there in Dallas? Because I think I would love him if he played here in Memphis, but he's one of those guys that the opposing team's not going to like because he definitely gets on other guys' skin at times.
Yeah, he is a big fan favorite. He's, I don't know how well known this is around the league. I really don't know, but he's actually from the same hometown as Dirk. So
I didn't know that
when he got brought in, it was like, who's this other kid from Wurzburg, Germany? Like, who's this now? And so you could kind of like early on, you could kind of see like, okay, he can stretch the floor. He plays hard. Like, we'll just see what happens. And then over time started to become a better shooter. He starts making like chase down blocks and he's just, yeah. He plays hard and it wasn't quite what you expected. And so he's very clearly, there's definitely the Germany connection that is, plays a big part in it, but he's very clearly a fan favorite. And unfortunately, I think he's something to keep an eye on with the trade deadline, because now that, in my opinion, that Jalen Brunson's out of that conversation, you only have so many pieces you can move. And he is a guy, like you said, that a lot of teams could use, whether you're a younger team, a win now team, whatever the case may be. So I know that the thing that I keep coming back to is his relationships with Luka, the team, Dwight, like so many of these guys, it's hard for me to envision them moving on from him. But again, if something presents itself where Dallas can't turn it down, I don't see how they can just keep trying to keep the same group just for the sake of keeping everybody together, keeping the band together. And so he's very much a fan favorite. The city loves him. If they lose him, there are so many times, oh my God, there are so many times trade scenarios will be presented and they're very clear. Like, yes, you do that 10 times out of 10 if you're Dallas. And then you'll have some people that will say, I'm not trading Maxi. Nope, not doing it. And it's just like, what do you got to give a little to get a little, but
definitely
there are just so many people that love him and love what he brings, because he's also a guy that he's 6'10". And so he's not known for his interior defense. He's known for his perimeter defense. And the fact that he can switch on, I mean, there were times we've played the Clippers the last 2 years in the playoffs. And there were times he's switched out on Kawhi. He's switched out onto Kawhi more so than Paul George, but the dude, the defense isn't bad. Like you would think that it's probably a lot worse because he's just big, but he moves those feet and he earns those minutes on the court. And so, yeah, I think there are a lot of teams that would love to have him and might just get their opportunity at this year's deadline.
Yeah. He's definitely a player that kind of fits in anywhere. Whether you're talking about a young team, veteran team. I mean, any guy, anything to use a guy like that size that can knock down shots and play some defense. So it'll be interesting to see. You're right, man. And when you look at that roster, if they're going to make a move, I think he'd probably be a guy that a lot of teams would ask about.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Well, Lauren, we appreciate you coming on with us. We will let you get out of here. We look forward to this Southwest Division rivalry.
Yeah, man.
These two teams are probably going to be near the top of it for years to come, hopefully, from the Grizzly standpoint. And, you know, if Dallas falls off a little bit, I'm okay with that. but before we get out of here, let everybody know where they can find you and find your work.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thank you guys so much for having me.
This was really fun.
Yeah, but you can follow me on Twitter at the Lauren Gunn. That's Gunn with two N's. All of my Mavs Moneyball articles will drop there. Any podcast episodes that I do will also be there, linked there, and all my videos, all the videos about of whoever's warming up, whatever they're working on, whatever they're doing, whatever they're saying, it all comes out there. So yeah, come chat with me there. I always am looking to connect with people from other fan bases. I can use a break from the Mavs Twitter from time to time, so come chat with me.
All right, thanks again.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah,
thank you,
man. Good stuff.
I'll catch up with you guys later.
Later. All right, guys, we're going to transition now that Miss Lauren is gone. We appreciate her coming on, spending time with us. It was great. Yeah, it's been a great show.
Definitely loved her insight.
Yeah. I want to talk about last night's game. We hadn't, scheduling has been rough. I'm generally on my on-call weeks. We can still get shows in, but I've just been getting beat down, or I was getting beat down last week. So we're going to talk about last night's game. We missed a couple in between there, so we apologize. But Isaac, for me, and that's, I didn't get to watch it. I fell asleep last night, probably around halftime, because I was just exhausted. But in the time that I was watching this game, and we've talked earlier in the show about how good this Mavericks defense has been, defense fueled the Grizzlies run whenever they go, you know, like the first 20 games, they were awful. They turned it around, and then they go on that big streak because their defense was so good. And now the Mavericks are doing the same thing. And it really seemed like this Mavericks defense, like, shut down. Their goal was to shut down everybody except for Ja, and they did it.
Yeah, I mean, they were able to, and they've done a good job of that in all the games. And I think one thing, and we've seen a lot of talk about this in Grizz Twitter today about Dallas being Memphis' kryptonite. And I think Dallas does play a style that kind of contrasts what the Grizzlies do. And I think in these four games, I think we've seen Dallas kind of impose their will on the game. Because even in games they won, I think the Grizzlies haven't scored 100 points in any of those games. And that's a rarity, because the Grizzlies scoring over 100 with regularity, and Dallas has been able to keep them under that 100 mark. I can't even remember even the game they won. I think it was in the low 90s. And I think Dallas plays an extremely slow pace, one of the slowest paces in the league, and I think the Grizzlies struggle with that. But on the other side of that coin, I think all four of these games have been weird. The game that the Grizzlies won, Luka was out. The game last week where they caught the Grizzlies on the back end of a back-to-back, 8 games in 12 days. I mean, you're missing half your rotation last night. I don't know if you can take a lot out of these four games. I think if you look at a playoff matchup and you told me I could get Dallas, as a Grizzlies fan, as a person that covers the team, I wouldn't be afraid of that matchup. I think fully healthy, you got Dylan Brooks to go out there and bother Luka. I think we might be a bit of a different story. Not that I'm saying Dallas is not a fantastic team. I don't think it'll be a sweep or anything like that, but I'm just saying I don't fear really anybody. I think Utah is kind of, we talked about that before, kind of the only team in the West that I feel like it's an extremely tough matchup with the Grizzlies. Anytime Phoenix, Golden State, you know they got to be tough. But I kind of like the way the Grizzlies match up with those teams. But with Dallas, I just think there's some weird stuff going on in those games. But last night, I think it was just a situation where you're just missing too many guys. Dallas is hot right now. They're playing really good basketball. Lauren says she doesn't think that Luka is, like, paying attention to that Luka versus John thing. I think he is, man. I think there is definitely something there, man, because his eyes light up when he sees those Grizzlies uniforms. But I just think Ja didn't have enough help last night. I mean, you look at the stats, Ja with 35 points, the rest of the starters, I think only 26 points combined. You only had one other player in double figures that's melting out the bench. And when you're shorthanded like that, that's just not going to cut it. You're going to need more contributions from guys like Jaren Jackson Jr. You're going to need him to put up bigger numbers offensively when you're missing guys than he had last night. And I think that's just kind of what it was. I just think Ja did everything he did, man. 35 points, 13 rebounds, 6 assists, a steal. I mean, looking like an all-star starter, MVP candidate, what those guys are supposed to do. But he just didn't get a lot of help last night. And I think that's kind of what we saw. Grizzlies kind of struggle to shoot the basketball. And just tough night. And that's going to happen when you're shorthanded like that.
Yeah, definitely. You know, 4-for-24 from three. Ja didn't make a three last night. Zaire Williams, he was shooting them. They just weren't falling for him. 1-for-8. Jaren only made one. It's tough when you're losing, you know, you lose a guy like DB, and then, you know, like, he's a guy that can bring scoring. Desmond Bane is a guy that has been bringing scoring this year. Kyle Anderson proved last year that he can go out and get buckets when he needs to, and he's down. Tyus Jones has been a guy that has kind of, you know, he's popped off a couple games this year. So the guys that are out of the rotation,
it's a bad right combination. Now,
it's tough, because Zaire Williams, while he's played well, and I'll tell you, probably the most impressive thing from him last night was the defense that he was playing on Luka. Whenever watching him on him,
absolutely.
Like, Luka is phenomenal, and he is a guy that you're not going to completely shut down in a game. You just can't do it. His ability to pass the ball and get to his spots, his turnaround fadeaways are very tough to defend. But Zaire was doing pretty well. I was happy with what I saw from him. You know, he got into some foul trouble and, you know, only played 23 minutes. But it's easy, if you look at this stat line, like, from this team, to see why they lost the game. And was that all because it was an off night for the Grizzlies, or was it, you know, the defense from Dallas? It's really tough to say, but the Grizzlies done essentially what they do in every game. they miss threes. That's not what, you know, they're not generally this bad from three. You're not going to shoot 17% from three.
Yeah. We hope not.
But, you know, they got up more. They got up 20 more shot attempts than the Dallas Mavericks. 25, actually.
25.
The Grizzlies shot 99 and the Mavericks shot 74.
And that's weird to see a 13-point loss and you got 25 more shots on goal out. There was a huge free throw discrepancy. And, of course, the Mavericks hit five more threes. So that's 15 points. And I think 25 points total between the free throw discrepancy and the three-point discrepancy. So that's kind of what made some of that up. But it is weird to see a team with 25 more shots on goal to lose a game by 13. That's not something that you're going to see in a box score often. Yeah, it just kind of lets you know how bad they shot the basketball last night.
That's the 37% from the field is awful. You know that. 16% from three is terrible. That's well below. I would say that's probably half of what they generally shoot. So, you know, if you add four more threes to that, which they made four, so if you double their made threes, this game is significantly closer. And we're talking different, you know, 13 for 19 from the free throw line. That's a rough night from the free throw line as well. So
especially when you're minus 12 in attempts, like you got to get there. You got to make them, man, at 13, 19. That's been a struggle for this team. And it's weird because it's like this team goes through swings on the free throw line, like their games. And it's even guys like Melton, even Steven Adams, who's a guy who's historically been a terrible free throw shooter, but there are times, like even last night, where I think he hit four in a row and his strokes look perfect, and then he'll have these to other nights where he just goes there and looks like he's never shot a free throw in his life. It's weird, and you'll see that from a lot of guys on the team. Ja does that at times, where he'll get in these streaks where he starts to miss free throws. Other times, he's automatic. It's weird with this team, and Melton has been bad as of late. That's something that's
He shot 80% from the free throw line last year, man.
That's what I'm saying. It's weird, man. I don't know.
So you look at Melton over his career, he is 75 his rookie year, 77 his sophomore year, 80% from the line last year, and he's shooting 70% this year.
Yeah.
And the thing about him, his misses are not – they like, he smokes them. It looks
he's been some bad ones over the last couple games. Net,
and it looks good, and it's like, okay, maybe he's going to find it. And then his next free throw, he looks like Shaq out there shooting it. And I'm like, what is going on?
I think there was one in the Denver game where, like, he almost broke the backboard. Like, it didn't touch rim at all. He's like, left of the rim, just smoked it. Like, then I'm like, what is going on, man? Like, I don't get it, man.
Yeah. So we won't run real long on the game. We've been going here for about an hour now with Lauren on, so I don't want to run this thing too long. Is there anything in particular you want to talk about before we get out of here? We will be back. The Grizzlies play, Wednesday?
Wednesday night, yeah.
So they got a couple days off. Not a whole lot of travel from Dallas to San Antonio. Texas is huge, so it is a little bit of a travel, but nothing crazy. So they'll have some days off here to recover before they play San Antonio. Anything else that you want to talk about before we get out of here, man?
Yeah, man, I've had a couple things. Hopefully, and with the Grizzlies, I doubt it. I've had people ask me all day, do I think the trio and protocols will be back on Wednesday? I would be surprised just because of how cautious the Grizzlies are. And even when guys get back, they like to do the conditioning stuff. I think it'll be either Friday or Saturday, hopefully Friday. And that kind of leads me to my next topic. The Grizzlies are one game up on Utah. Utah has a tough schedule. Rudy Gobert is out tonight, and they're at Phoenix. I think they're 11-point underdog, and they play Phoenix back-to-back. They also play Phoenix. They host Phoenix on Wednesday night. So, this is an opportunity to make a move here. And I think I got a feeling that Ja's going to have a monster game on Wednesday night. That game against the Spurs was originally scheduled to be 6:30 on ESPN. They changed the tip time to 7:30. They pulled that game off ESPN for the Knicks and the Heat. Why? I have no idea, but we know how Ja takes things personally. I mean, he knows about it because he tweeted with some emojis, like a handshake emoji, like, all right, I see what y'all are doing. And they're coming off a big loss. They got 2 days off. I got a feeling he's going nuclear in San Antonio on Wednesday. So be on the lookout for that. But they got an opportunity to make a move here, and Utah will be here at FedEx Forum on Friday. So they got an opportunity here, maybe get a couple games, 2.5, 3 games up on Utah here. We'll see how it plays out. But it's a big week, and you got the back-to-back at home. Course Friday, Utah Saturday on against the Washington Wizards. So I mean, they got an opportunity to make a move here. I got a feeling they're gonna get a victory on Wednesday night, and again, man, that could definitely help them solidify their spot in third.
Yeah, I like it. I'm obviously, if the guys are back Wednesday, I think it to me, you know, that they could travel to San Antonio. The 6 days, which is the new protocols for vaccinated asymptomatic players, would put them
And hopefully BC, this is not something extended with him, man. He was out with the sore back. You definitely didn't want to see that with how well he's playing, man. He's had tough luck as well with injuries this year, kind of like Dylan Brooks, man. It seems like every time he gets back, starts playing well, he goes out again. So hopefully that's not something that's extended, but we'll see how that plays out.
Yeah, yeah. They're generally cautious, but as shorthanded as they have been, it may be something that he tries to play through. But, you know, it looks like today would be the day where you would hit – the 6 days if they are asymptomatic, and we don't know whether they are or not. So realistically, they could be back for Wednesday's game, but I think that it's quite possible that we don't see either of the four guys until the Grizzlies get back home on Friday against the Jazz. So, you know,
it's also probably a game set. I was going to say, not to disrespect San Antonio or anything. That's probably a game that they feel like they can get without those guys. And they're always going to err on the side of caution and give guys as much rest as possible. So I would honestly be shocked if they, with knowing how they handle these things, like I would be surprised if they fly those guys out there and have them playing on Wednesday night. Again, I think Friday is kind of the target date because that's a huge game. And they could definitely need all hands on deck for that one. We'll see if Gobert, I'm not even sure what he's out with. I just saw Woj tweet out that he was out. I didn't even look at the tweet. He's back by then, but they got some issues with Utah, I think, with team chemistry and stuff like that, man. That team, even when they were healthy, they haven't looked the same as of late. We'll see how that plays out, man. A lot of talent there. We know how good that team could be, but I think they have some internal stuff going on there.
Yeah, Bojan Bogdanovic is out as well. He's got a fracture in his finger. So, you know, I don't know if that's something – I would imagine that's something that he can play through.
Yeah.
I don't know for sure. Think so. But I know that he's out tonight as well. So there's no telling what type of roster we're going to see the Jazz bring. And if they're shorthanded heading into Memphis, you know, that's good news for Memphis. Hopefully the Grizzlies can take advantage of that and put some more space in between them. But
yeah, but they got those two back-to-back games against Phoenix, man. Phoenix got a tune to help the Grizzlies out here. And I think they play – I want to say they play the Warriors before they play the Grizzlies. So, I mean, Utah could take three or four losses this week. So, I mean, that's definitely an opportunity for the Grizzlies to kind of solidify that spot. And you're looking up at Golden State, and you kind of felt like this would be a spot where the Grizzlies could kind of slip back. But if they get that win on Wednesday, I mean, you go 2-2 on this trip. Even before they announced the guys were going to be out, I was thinking 3-1 would be where I would want to be. It would be fantastic if they could get there. Man, 2-2 with the shorthanded roster on this trip, that would be amazing. If they can get two wins on this trip, and that kind of stay where they were and not losing ground, actually gain ground.
Yep. All right, man. I've got nothing else up here. We can wrap it up. We'll be back Wednesday night doing a post game, hopefully talking about a Grizzlies win. I don't know that it's disrespectful. The Spurs are just not as good of a team as the Nuggets, and the Grizzlies with the current build at like the current guys that they have right now, they beat that Nuggets team in Denver at elevation. So there's no reason to think that you can't beat a lesser team.
I think the Grizzlies will be favored in the game. It's a game that you should win. I'm a big fan of Deontay Murray, Derek White. They got some solid pieces on that team, but the Grizzlies are just in a different spot right now. That's a game that you should win. I think the level that he's taking, that's a game that you should win right now, even with the guys out. And that's not being cocky or anything. The Spurs just aren't good. Like I want to say that they're under 500 at home. I mean, it's just not a good basketball team. And I think that's just a game they should win. And like I said earlier, man, I could be wrong, but I got a feeling Ja remembers that they took that game off ESPN, man. I think he's going to come out aggressive, and I think he's going to have a big game.
Yeah, the Spurs are six game under 500 at home. They're 9-15 on the season.
That's rough, so, man.
You know, it is a game that the Grizzlies can definitely win if Bane, Anderson, Jones, and everybody returns to them, whatever, you know, on Wednesday. Great. If not, I still think that the Grizzlies could and should win that game. But we're going to go ahead and get out of here. I'm going to blame it on Tony. And, Tony, I know that you're listening because you tell me you listen all the time. My old Twitter handle got banned I don't know why. I put in an appeal. They said that I was inciting violence. And I've been thinking about this. Like, the only thing that I tweeted that was controversial at all in the last 2 weeks was Tony posted something about President Joe Biden, all the stuff that he's done since he's taken office. And there was something on there about 1.5 million shots delivered or something like that. And I'm like, I highly doubt that he done that, because that's a lot of stabbing for one person to do, right? Being sarcastic, making a joke.
Yeah, I thought it, yeah.
And that's it.
That's probably it.
So Tony, it's all your fault that my Twitter handle got banned. So I've got a new one. My new one is David W2111. Kept it pretty close. So come find the new Twitter handle. You know that we like interactions. We like talking with you guys on Twitter. The show is still at Ethos Grizz. We still have the Ja Morant jersey giveaway going. That is going to run until the All-Star game. I'm going to cut off the entries at the start of the All-Star game so I can get everybody in and put them in a randomizer. And we will announce the winner following the All-Star game. So go over and check that out. Isaac, let them know where they can find you and get us out of here, man.
Yeah, man, I don't envy you, man, because my Twitter account got hacked a couple of weeks back, man. I was scared to death. Like, I was able to get it back, but I've known a lot of stories just like David's where things happen and people haven't been able to get it back and lose all those followers trying to find all those people back and get those people to follow you back. It's tough, man. That's not a spot you want to be in, man. So I definitely hate that for you. But special thanks to Lauren Gunn, man, for joining us from Mavs Moneyball. Definitely go check out her work. But you can find me on Twitter at Isaac_Rivals, ISAAC_Rivals. Go over to Ethos Grizzlies, give us a follow again. We'll be back on Wednesday night with post game. Hopefully, plus a big Grizzlies victory. For David, Isaac, thank the Lord again. And we gone.
And that will conclude our Sports Ethos presentation.